Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. We're super excited today to bring you another episode. This is Laura Alley, president of Triple Win Sales, and I am so happy to have Regina Agia here with us today. She's the president of the Garden State Initiative. I have to tell the readers that I did seek Regina out for this interview because I stumbled upon her speech that she had done online. It was the text of her speech at the Wings Annual Growth Dinner. And I couldn't believe, like, how much great advice, really great advice there was in there, Regina. So thank you for coming on to our show and, you know, welcome to today's broadcast.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Yeah, we're really excited to have you. So, again, I found your speech online. Tell me a little, or tell our listeners out there a little bit about that engagement and what got you to that stage at that Wings dinner.
Sure. Yeah, it's a relatively new organization established by a woman who worked in the finance industry, and she was transitioning. She had spent about 2 decades. Varsha is the leader's name. And she's in her transition, she thought it would be helpful to set up an organization totally to benefit others, to really take her network that she had from corporate America and try to make them available to young professional women as they were coming into the workplace and set up mentor relationships that might not otherwise occur. So Varsha and I have a mutual friend who introduced us professionally. And when we met, we, obviously hit it off, and she asked me to come speak to their team about leadership, particularly, you know, addressing the mentors and mentees in the organization.
Excellent. It was such a good speech. I read it, and there were so many different components within it that were so relevant to today's time, both from a corporate standpoint and a political standpoint. And the topic of the speech, I should have stated this earlier, was power, leadership, and character, right? How did you decide that that was the subject you wanted to speak about that night?
Well, you know, of course she asked me to speak to leadership, but you have to go back and remember that when I was writing, putting this together, it was the middle of November of 2017. And I thought it was impossible to stand up in front of a group of young professional women and, you know, these mentors and the board members and not speak to what was going on so prominently in the media. So, you know, there were just extraordinary numbers. We were all starting to see it unfold of, you know, generally women who were trying to break into an industry and the abuse or assault that they endured by generally powerful men who were in control of the industry. So, you know, the whole idea of, you know, power and that power dynamic, I thought, was, number one, timely. And then number two, though, you know, I reminded, you know, myself that while these are horrific and should never be repeated and always, you know, these individuals should be removed from the workplace, that they are the minority, that there are plenty of individuals who demonstrate really great character. And, of course, what we all want to believe about ourselves is that we have strong character. And so, honestly, the piece almost wrote itself because of the timeliness of it. And, you know, when I look back and I inserted, you'll recall one of the quotes in there was from Abraham Lincoln about, you know, men can endure adversity, but if you really want to challenge their character, give them power. And so this is a subject that, you know, obviously has gone on for hundreds of years and will continue to be studied, you know, the next hundreds of years. So I thought there were a lot of lessons that we should think about ourselves as women and what kind of leaders we want to be. And remember that, you know, you're not genetically exempt to falling prey to the seduction, frankly, of power and being careful about what kind of leaders we want to do and thoughtful about it. I thought, you know, had a lot of lessons in it.
It does. And, you know, it's funny when you're talking about that, it's reminding me that I also come from a Fortune 100 background. And when I worked at Xerox, some of the toughest people were the women managers. Like they weren't easy all the time. I should say that. But one of the examples in your book that you alluded to was Stephen Covey's book. And I love that book. I read it in my 20s. I read it again in my 30s. And I think there's so many great things in there. And when you speak about character, to me, that's the primary lesson from that book is to be character focused, right? And I don't know, that really hit home to me. And I think probably a lot of our readers as well, because that's such It's such a famous book, but it's kind of like going back to the basics, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, absolutely. And it's this whole notion of, you know, building a framework for yourself that you'll operate in, whether it's about, you know, some of your character components, you know, what's right and wrong and what's acceptable and unacceptable. But in Covey's book, it's really about having a framework. You know, it's a whole idea, and I mentioned this in there, right, about, you know, knowing that you need to seek first to understand, then to be understood,
right.
And building. I always love my people roll their eyes at me, you know, who know me, because I always talk about emotional bank accounts. That's an incredibly important component in there under the win-win, you know, finding the win-win, that you need to build emotional bank accounts that you can draw upon when you need them from someone else, of people you work with. So, yeah, I think there's just endless, and I, like you, read it over, you know, every decade or so, I read it again because it's such terrific advice.
And that's a really good reminder about the emotional bank accounts. You just reminded me of how important that is, and it's true. So some of the examples that you gave in your speech, I mean, there were so many good ones, I thought, but one example primarily struck home to me when you were working on Superstorm Sandy, and you said that Chris Christie gave you and the rest of your team, you know, four goals or three goals, and you were in charge of one, but you couldn't achieve your goal without the rest of the leadership team achieving theirs. And I find that something that's somewhat missing sometimes in corporate America, at least when I deal with CEOs, that ability to really bind people at a high level to common goals. Can you talk about that example that you spoke of in your speech a little bit?
Sure, yeah. You know, I think it's a real consistent characteristic of leaders that I've really, you know, worked for and I've really admired, as well as situations that where I've been able to be successful because of this idea of having interrelated goals, that individuals understand their own responsibility, but they also know that they are only successful as a team and how they relate to the other people on the team. And so, yeah, I mean, after the storm, I mean, we needed so many things simultaneously, and being able to get above the fray and figure out what are the four or five, you know, most important things we have to get done. And the governor was able to do that. And, you know, he spoke to all of us as a team and reminded us we were all as important as the other. So we had to help each other, but we also had to deliver on our goal. And, you know, we had to, in the case of Superstorm Sandy, you know, number one, we had to get the roads open because we couldn't get anything to happen in the state without the roads being open. Number two,
right.
We had to get power restored to, you know, millions of people without power had to have power to individuals. Thirdly, we had to get fuel available because nobody could move on the roads without the fuel. And then I had the schools, as I mentioned in the in my remarks, you know, giving a sense of normalcy that people get up every day and get the kids out to school and can get on the roads and get gas in their car. You know, the whole return to normalcy was essential. And he was very, you know, focused on getting that done in 2 weeks. I mean, that we really had to get as much of that accomplished. And, you know, I think, you know, looking back on it, it was Herculean. On the other hand, enormous number of people helped. So it was one that, you know, is a great reminder of clarity of goal, but, you know, support from a whole team is essential for everyone to feel successful.
Exactly. So you also had some more examples in your speech, and I don't want to steal your thunder because it was your great stuff, but was there something else that was maybe a prominent leadership example that you spoke of that you think our listeners today would benefit from?
Well, I think so. I mean, I've been very lucky. I've been able to work in lots of different situations in both private and public sector, as you just remarked. But, you know, by far, you know, it was leading that team in network operations. And I was at AT&T. It was about 18 to 20 months worth of, you know, my career. And, you know, I walked into a situation where we had to take a team of about just over 3,000 individuals. 90% were technicians and 10% were supervisors. And we had to move from a functionally aligned organization to one that had integrated work teams so that, you know, people who used to work just on ordering or just on maintenance and only worried about those things then. Now to sit next to people who were working on, you know, provisioning and other functions, but serving the same customer, we became very customer oriented. So we, number one, we had to restructure the work that everybody was doing, which was disruptive enough, but we had to move from 90 work locations down to 20 and at the same time eliminate 30% of the cost, meaning 30% of the workforce. So, right. You know, the couple of management lessons, you know, that come out of just trying to accomplish all of that in about, you know, as I said, 18 to 20 months is, number one, you have to have a tightly knit team. It's true on Superstorm Sandy, and it was true in this case that there were about 8 or 10 of us that we were really, you know, the ones that had to be sure that we were making progress and delivering on results and being, you know, confident in what we were doing all at the same time and not, you know, separating oneself and blaming each other when something didn't go right, because lots of things go wrong in those kind of situations. Right. So number one, you know, the idea that you have to have a team that sticks together. And then number two, you know, a large team like that, remember, you know, while there's a lot of numbers and you're looking at results, that you're dealing with people. And, you know, you had to, you know, remember that we eliminated 1,000 jobs. And most of the people were doing a different job. So it was enormous disruption for people, you know, in their lives, and that affected how they reacted at work and what they, you know, felt and their emotional, you know, stability, frankly. So number two, you know, always remember that, you know, there are people and that you constantly have to care for that, you know, aspect of work. And then lastly, I'd say keeping your eye on the goal, and this is consistent with Covey, you know, we were dealing with, in both the situations we were just talking about, Sandy as well as this restructuring of the workforce at AT&T, that things go on every day, every night, but you have to keep your eye on the goal and listen and adjust the plan, but never lose sight of what your end goal is and constantly be working toward that. And the team has to be together on that and remember that everybody has good days and bad days, but you're constantly keep your eye on the, right. on the prize. So, you know, I wouldn't have traded those 18 to 20 months for anything because the variety of people and situations and, you know, all sorts of, you know, different experiences I had. And, you know, and I feel lucky, you know, that I had, and the team was very successful. And in right. the end, of course, we achieved our goals, but more importantly, we improved the service to our customers by 50%. So as one example, just, you know, yeah, I mean, one example, I mean, so people, you know, can understand the context that we had a, what's called mean time to restore. So when the service goes out to when it's restored, it was running consistently at 4 hours. But by the time we restructured the work and moved everyone around and retrained, we were running at 2 hours of service restore time to the customers. So we kept getting awards for improving service at the end. So that's psychologically and emotionally just very rewarding for everyone because we served the customer, which was, well, and that's driving the customer need into the operation and understanding that you have to organize around that and make that part of the only measure of success.
There's a lot that government can learn from these examples, you know. What you're talking about is something that government needs desperately. Just that whole, you know, way to re-engineer current work processes and think outside the box. So you said something
I'd love to
earlier
do an interview another time. Sorry.
I know. Let's do it. We'll schedule a whole series of these because you have so much good information that really from someone like me who works with CEOs all over the tri-state area, this is what people need. They want to know and they want to learn and they want to sharpen their own saws. People do love that. It makes them feel good. But something you said earlier about, you know, you turn on the TV and it seems like people in power or in, you know, certain prominent situations, there's a lot of negativity around them. They're under tremendous scrutiny. Yes, that's true. But also times they maybe don't act with the most, you know, in, they don't act with the most integrity or the highest character. What would you say and what advice would you give to people listening out there to foster that development of powerful leaders that also act with high integrity and authentic character within their organization? Like, what do you think the best thing for CEOs to do to build those type of leaders would be?
Well, I think there's an awful lot of benefit to putting oneself and putting individuals into a whole variety of situations to see how they react and for them to learn how they react, frankly, because it always comes down to, you know, the individual is accountable for their behavior, and the individual needs to understand, you know, where they can perform most, you know, most proficiently versus situations that, you know, they're not the best at. And I always think of sales leadership, you know, in this situation, that I always found it fascinating when you look at different sales managers or sales leaders and how they react when they're behind on quota and they have a whole group of people, you know, who are performing at different levels and what they do about it. And, you know, there are, I'm sure, Laura, have seen this in a whole host of situations. But I think it's just a, you know, an easy way to think about some people, you know, berate people. Some people go out on sales call and try to coach the people to be better performers. Other people change out people. And it teaches you about the individual and how you react and what your organization, you know, if you're the CEO.
You are so right. That is exactly what happens. Everybody acts differently. Some people unravel and some people maintain a totally different strategy altogether. You're right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Is there some example of a powerful leader that really had an impact on you? Like, is there somebody that comes to mind that you say, wow, that person just really impacted me and really was a great role model for me and how I want to lead?
Yeah, I mean, I, as I said, I've been lucky. I've had a lot of great people I've gotten a chance to work for, and I really admire tremendously. And, you know, some of them are better known and less well known. But, you know, one that stands out just because of the longevity of her career and the impact I think she's had on me and others, it's Gail McGovern. She's currently the head of the Red Cross down in Washington, D.C.
Oh, yeah.
But she was at AT&T for 20 years. And she was a tremendous role model for a lot of women in that another characteristic, unfortunately, you see in the workplace a lot is women don't always help one another. And they feel like there's only a few slots and they have to, you know, fight for it and hold on to it and not understand about, you know, it's about performance and bringing the best leaders forward. And Gail, by far, was consistently, you know, supported women, was a hard worker herself, obviously, and very smart and, you know, achieved tremendous, you know, personal success. But she always coached women and was always willing to take a call. And I'm still in touch with her. And she went on to she went to another company and then Harvard. She taught there for a while. Now she's running Red Cross, and I think with great success.
Good, that's a good one. So we're about to wrap up, but before we do, are there any other takeaways you would recommend to any CEOs out there listening about navigating in today's business and economic climate? Although the economy seems to be doing quite well lately, thank goodness. And, I mean, it must make it easier, right? It must make it easier for the CEOs. But is there anything you would want to leave them with or any other bits of advice?
Well, you know, one thing that I don't see as much as I think is helpful to a really productive work environment, yes, of course, financial, you know, success is makes everything a lot easier. But this whole idea of being committed to development of those who are working for you, develop your own personal development throughout, you know, one's career, because, you know, there are lessons obviously that are, you know, being brought into the public view now that, you know, people can learn from, whether they're 60 years old or, you know, 26 years old, about how to behave in the workplace, but also, you know, just general areas of development because of technology changes are, you know, financial markets change. I mean, who would have ever thought Bitcoin would, you know, be such a prominent, you know, thing that we all needed to understand? Maybe, maybe not. Or blockchain. That's my other favorite example. Like, blockchain has become like this, you know, incredible technology that is infiltrating, you know, companies, with such rapidity that I can't imagine everybody doesn't need to think about how they do systems development and security in a whole different way. So, you know, development, I think constantly, you know, realizing that you have to worry about that about for yourself and for those in your organization.
It's funny you should say that. I just finished a blog on how I feel blockchain's the next biggest disruptor to the business climate. Because I think it's going to be almost as big as the internet, because it's going to transform the way people do business.
Everybody's business.
Well, Yeah, we're gonna.
I don't even understand how it's gonna.
I know. I'm fascinated by it. Actually, it's a fascinating thing and it's exciting. So
yep.
I cannot thank you enough, Adina. I know we could speak for hours, and I would like to, if you were kind enough and generous enough with your time, schedule some subsequent episodes where we could get into some more topics and more of your experience, because I think, again, there's a big need for what you have and the knowledge you have and the knowledge that you're generous enough to share, you know, throughout the, not only the business community, but the political community and the government community. And so I thank you sincerely for being on our show today.
Thank you,
and
Laura.
I really appreciate it.
I'd love to come back whenever you can make time. I'd love to spend, whatever time you make available. Thank you very much for today.
Thank you. You're very nice. And for our listeners out there, if you want to learn more about Regina or the Garden State Initiative, you can go to their website. It's www.gardenstateinitiative.org, and there's a whole bunch of great information. She's also on Facebook. And are you on Twitter, Regina?
Yes, we are.
Okay, excellent. So you can go to the website, and it'll give you all the information for that. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in today. Again, stay tuned. We look forward to bringing you more episodes on these subjects, and have a great afternoon. Thank you again, Regina.
Thank you.